Puberty was not even a it was not even a topic of conversation in my home at all.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I mean, when it comes to puberty, I think my dad tried to have a conversation with me about sex, and he failed terribly. He tried to do it from a biblical standpoint, when you're in school, you hear about stuff all the time. You already know stuff. And I just remember thinking, well, this is very awkward. And so in my parents' house, that conversation never came up. You just don't talk about it.
Yeah.
I think for me, it's what's interesting in my family, this is going to be really funny, but in my family, every girl, so there's 13 girls, first cousins, 13 of us. And each of us, when we had our period, sorry, guys, the men were home. And had to take us to go buy stuff.
That's
how
awesome.
Crazy is that? Like, every man, every father for every girl in my family was there for when their girl got their cycle and had to take them, show them how to do everything, take them to go pick it up, and then come back and tell our mothers what happened.
Man.
That's the craziest thing. Like, even to the point where the grandchildren, so my niece, my dad was there when she got hers and took her and did it. And it was the funniest thing. I'm like, these are like the most manliest men. Like, and you know, and this is happening. And they're like, okay, well, here's what we do. And I'm like, this is crazy.
So about 2 months ago, and this is does not answer that question, but I have to piggyback off this because it's just too funny. And my 11-year-old got hers. So obviously pretty young, but she got hers. She's like, Daddy, and she explains this to me. And I'm like, thank goodness for me. At least my girlfriend was there. I was like, baby. So she took care of it. I had a conversation with her to a certain degree, but
we didn't talk about sex. There was no conversations about, you couldn't have a boyfriend until you were 18. Mm-hmm. There will be no boys in this house, even though everybody had a boyfriend, but you guys know the deal with that.
See, so I went to Catholic school growing up. So my mom and dad just kind of let them handle it. But my mom was the 7th grade teacher and the vice principal of the school that I went to.
Oh my god.
So she was actually my teacher. And I could just see her going like, oh gosh, like we're going to have, like, oh, I'm basically talking to my daughter in front of the whole entire class. And I'm like,
oh my
she's talking to me in front of the whole entire class right now. And like, she's talking about sex and all these things. And everybody's like watching and looking at me. And I'm like, dude, don't even
talk
look at me right now.
Not that.
Welcome to First Gens. This is a podcast about first-generation Americans and filling in the blanks beside the hyphen. I'm Preen.
This is Sky. What's up, everybody? Welcome back.
Sky, like, why do you sound like that? Like, you sound like you're on a phone or something.
No, this week I am connecting via phone to the studio. I am in Durham. I had some other weekend plans. It's the weekend of Mother's Day, so, you know, I have to do some stuff with the fam band and couldn't really make it into Charlotte. So, here we are.
It's something that, you know, every person has experienced growing up in adolescence. It's puberty.
Best experience in your life.
The wonder years.
Oh, gosh. So, how was puberty for you, Corinne?
Oh, gosh. Puberty for me was much. I am a very tall woman in present
She's
day.
She's an Amazon.
I'm a smooth 5'8", and I don't mind wearing heels from time to time. And so growing up, I grew fast. So by the time I was in, I remember by the time I was in fourth grade, I was taller than my mom, who is 5'2". So I grew very fast and was like one of the tallest like people in my class, like kind of just throughout like elementary and like middle school. And then everyone finally caught up in high school. But I remember that it was really tough for me because I also developed very early as well. And I have large breasts, and I remember being in third grade I kid you not, I was wearing a white shirt. I'm a fashion person, and clothing kind of helps me, like, remember historical moments in time. I was wearing a white, like, fitted, like, little top that had, like, a little bow on the collar, like, the really tiny, delicate little ribbon bow, and it was, like, fitted. And I, like, my mom used to make us wear singlets, which are just, like, camis or, like, undershirts or whatever under our stuff. And at the time, I wasn't, like, I didn't start wearing training bras, but I had started developing. And this little boy, we're in line about to, like, go outside, like, leave the classroom. This little boy turns around, stares at my chest, and says, "Dang, look at your titties." And everyone looked at me, and I was mortified. I will never forget that. I remember that classroom. I remember that moment. Like, that moment is, like, frozen and engraved in my brain. And yes, it was honestly very mortifying. And I remember, you know, we talked about this in, like, one of our past episodes. I am very feminine, and I was very, like, a girly girl. But throughout, like, from third to, like, fifth grade, I went through a kind of awkward phase because I was going through puberty and I was developing, and I was noticing that boys and men were kind of giving me attention or kind of staring at, like, my female developing parts and, like, my breasts and different things, and it made me very uncomfortable. And I remember, like, wearing baggier clothes or, like, wanting to wear, like, looser shirts and bigger things for, like, a good, like, two, three years because it made me feel uncomfortable. But I couldn't even really, like, fully understand why I think it made me feel uncomfortable. But it was just, like, I felt like I was so much more ahead of everyone else. And I just wanted, like, when you're a kid, you just want to blend in and you just want to be a kid, like, you don't want to have boobs. Like, you just want to be a kid. So, like, I get that, like, some little girls had moments where they're, like, stuffing, like, their little training bras. It was, like, the complete opposite with me. I was, like, let's suck these girls down, strap them down, cover them up. Because it was, yeah, it was very uncomfortable for me for a while. So that kind of was, like, a dive into puberty for me. And then there were just, like, a few other, I think, just, like, moments in life, just like when I got my period, my sister, my big sister, was like the person who I talked to, like, about that. But we did you guys like do anything in elementary school? Because, like, they put, like, the boys in one room, the girls in one room, talked about
just starting it. Starting in the conversation.
Yes, and, like, kind of like, this is a pad. This is how you put on a pad. And hormones.
Oh, we didn't get instructions. No, we just got the pads.
Oh, they just handed them out to you.
You got instructions?
Yes, they, like, kind of, like, showed us, like, how to, like, open it and how to, like put it on. Well, not how to put it on, but, like, would show you, like, okay, this is, like, what you do. Again, like, they kind of showed, like, the whole, like, pads, like, situation, but they're, I don't think they ever, I'm sure actually they showed us, like, maybe how to use a tampon, but, like, my mom would just, she would never buy me tampons. Like, that's just not a thing that she did. And even I just, like, remember, and we've, like, kind of talked about this before, like, my oldest sister, who is, like, much older than me, who kind of has acted like a second mom, just, like, growing up, she, like, made it seem as though, like, oh, no, I don't use tampons. Like, you shouldn't use tampons because, like, only loose girls, like, use tampons. And I was like, but if I need a tampon, and I'm like, how if I get my period and I want to go swimming? Like, so I just can't swim. Like, I was just like, aren't there more things, like, associated with this? Like, I just, like, remember questioning it, like, this don't sound right. But I was just like, okay, like, whatever you say. And it wasn't until I got older and I was just like, hold up now. Like, they really were correlating the use of tampons with you not being a virgin and, like, being sexually active and being quote unquote loose, which was, like, sex shaming and, like, all of these things.
Yeah, it's, like, so ridiculous, all of the messages that, like, people who are perceived to be female get in terms of, like, around puberty. Like, you know, like, dudes, they get told, like, And I can't say for sure exactly what they get told, right? Because I'm not a man, a male, and I'm socializing that way. But, like, essentially, like, from what, like, I've gathered, it's mostly, like, you're going to start growing hair and muscles, and you're going to start smelling bad, and you're going to, like, have, like, ejaculation in your sleep and stuff like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or, like, you have them, like, random or whatever.
Yeah.
That's about it. Whereas, like, women, we get, like, or, like, people were, like, perceived to be like women get all of these messages around, like, well, if you use tampons, then that can break your hymen. If you have a broken hymen, then you're not a virgin, which is like the stupidest thing in the world.
That's crazy.
Like, that has, like, there's no correlation. And, like, one thing for me was, like, growing up, once I started, like, getting my period, I was never told, like, my mom and I never really talked about it. And so, like, I was having excruciating pain associated with my period.
Yeah.
And I went to leave online, and I read that, like, oh, you would get cramps. And I just thought that, like, the amount of pain I was in was normal because I clearly had nothing else to compare it to and no one else to talk about it with. And then, like, sixth grade, one of my really good friends got put on birth control, partially because she had really bad acne, but also because she had really bad cramps. And that was, like, the first time, like, and she wasn't sexually active.
Yeah.
And, like, that was the first time I heard of someone being, not active, the first time I heard of someone being on birth control. And, like, I remember, like, because of, like, you know, societal pressures, being like, oh, my God, you're on birth control? Like, what does that mean? And then, like, when she, like, told me, like, no, it's for these reasons. And I was like, wait, like, you can take medicine for, like, really bad cramps?
You're right.
What?
That
helps, and I remember going to my mom and telling her, and she was just like, and I was like, mom, you know, I didn't think that I'm broken.
She
was like, what? Oh, and I'd be like, calm down, girl. I am broke. You know, nobody wants me. I am not interested in nobody out there. But what I really want is not to want to die
right
7 days out of the month.
Thank you.
That's my period for 7 days.
Thank you.
And, like, and that's when, like, my mom was like, oh, well, you know, like, periods are just really hard, and you bleed a lot, and they're just, they hurt a lot. And that's when, the moment when I realized, like, oh, like, girl, you don't know either. Like, we don't have to live this way. I've seen the promised land. I'm trying to tell you, let's go.
However, because of the idea that
like, I could then become sexually active, as if taking a pill is going to make me suddenly want to, like, would have, like, at that young age, like, wanted me to, like, engage. I was so awkward with my body, I didn't want anyone to see it. Like, let alone to, like, have sex with someone. Like, I just wanted to take my little birth control pill and not want to die for the majority of the month. And keep it moving.
Yes. I had a very similar experience too. Like, when I finally, like, heard that was also a use for birth control, because my cramps were horrible, like, so deathly painful. And I knew of, like, other girls that just, like you mentioned too, like, that just wouldn't even come to school for, like, the first, like, 2 days of their period because their cramps were so bad, like, in high school. And I just remember, like, how crippling it was. But I also remember, and I don't know if you remember this, but you might once I tell you, but when we were in college, I was so stressed out, like, 1 month. Like, I was so stressed out with everything going on in college and just did not, like, remember, like, what was going on, but I was just stressed to the max. I was stressed out so much that I did not have my period for, like, 2 months. And I remember being so panicked because I was like, how am I not having my period? I haven't had my period in 2 months. Am I the Virgin Mary? Oh, my God. Am I pregnant? I thought I had not had sex. I was a virgin. Okay. I had
no,
there's no sexual intercourse.
She was legit thinking that she was, like, hosting the second coming. Like, she,
no, but really.
Jesus was in her womb.
No, but really.
She was so concerned. Like, I don't know, like, the whole, like, they were, like, running around with the children with your head cut off, like, that was really a bad.
I was so freaked out. I was like, what is happening? And I remember telling you about it, and either you told me or someone told me. Yeah, you did laugh, but then you're like, oh girl, like I ain't had my period for like a month and a half, girl, like it's stress. But I was like, oh, like let me go to Campus Health and like take like a test or something. Like I was freaked out. So I went to like Student Health, Campus Health, and I like told them, and they were just like, oh girl, like calm down. And yeah, but right, but because it like it was stress, but then also I did have like irregular periods, and so birth control made sense because it would give me like I would feel better that I knew when my period was coming, because before I never had like a clockwork period anyway. I would know when it was coming, like I could control it and, you know, feel a little bit more like secure about it and help my cramps. So I was like, oh, this is like a win-win. And I do remember telling my mom like that I was going to be on birth control, but I kind of told her like, mama, like I feel like I have like a health like deficiency or something. And I think that reassured her. So she didn't like react. Like she was like still supportive of it because I think she saw it from like a health perspective, which was like very like relieving, because I was like, oh God, like she's going to think that, you know, I'm like, you know, out in these streets. But that thankfully was not the case. But, and it's just also a thing like normalizing menstrual cycles. Like women bleed. We have menstrual cycles. It's a bigger issue that has made like a lot of women uncomfortable about like talking about like their menstrual cycle and, you know, everything. And maybe they had a traumatic experience like early in puberty that may have like, you know, affected them. But it's just something again to think about and to just again like normalize, because it's normal. It's normal.
I mean, even if you like think about like the commercials for like pads and things like that, or tampons, like they've changed that over the years. But like even thinking like in our lifetime, like the commercials where they had like the blue liquid, like why would it have to be like, we all know this is like the blood. I have never seen the blood come out my body that was blue. Like, so can we be real? Like, is it so hard to use like red tinted water for a period commercial?
That's
like
real.
This is how dumb, why are we so afraid of a basic function of over 50% of the population? Like, people have periods. Some women have periods. Some men have periods. People have periods. It is fine. It's just the blood coming out of our bodies, and we can deal with it. Like, so you should too.
Thank you. Thank you. Pretty much. Pretty much. Just deal with it. This is Betty's story. Again.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that can't be. It's Betty. Miss Betty Answers. Here to talk about sex. So basically, when I got my period at a fairly young age, right? And like, I didn't even realize that it was a period. I thought I had injured myself coming off the slide. So I didn't know. I was experiencing some kind of changing, you know, but I didn't know what was necessarily going on. Then one day I came home from school, and my mom used to work night shift, so she'd be home by the time like I came home from school, and she was like, Tama, we need to sit down and have a discussion. And I was like, oh God, I got a call home from a teacher or something. And she was like, no, she was like, you started your period and you didn't tell me. And I was like, when? And she was like, maybe a couple days ago, I did the laundry and I noticed some spotting and whatnot. I was like, oh girl, that was just me playing off of the slide. I injured myself. It's okay. She was like, no, this is it. And she was like, so things are going to have to change. And I used to be very much scared of the dark, right? And I think I was in fourth grade. Yeah, around fourth grade, maybe a bit younger. No, it wasn't third. It was definitely fourth grade. And so when my mom would go to work at night, like, I'd lay in my bed when she's going to work, but I'd get up in the middle of the night and go to my dad's room because I was scared because my mom and dad, you know, I'd go to their room and sleep with my dad and my sister. And my mom was like, no, you can't do that anymore. You got to get comfortable sleeping in your own bed. You're a woman now. And I was like, I'm not a woman. I'm a girl who is scared of the dark. And my mom was like, things are going to have to change. She was like, if ever, you know, somebody's touching you in an inappropriate spot. And she always talked about that, made me feel comfortable to say, like, hey, somebody touched me somewhere. I don't feel uncomfortable. She was like, you know, you need to let me know. Like, just transitioning, I was a double zero until I got to college. I did not have any boobs. I was very tomboyish. My mom used to always wear, like, dress me up in, like, dresses, and I could not stand dresses because I like to sit with my legs open. And so she'd put me, like, those thick, tight, like, stockings on. I always had those with socks on top of them. I hated that. And, like, little trolls. I remember I liked trolls, so I used to have troll stockings. And I remember every time I'd get a new pair, I'd rip holes through them. And my mom's like, you're a little girl, like, don't be too rough. Don't climb that tree. Don't do that. And so, but other than that, like, it was just, my mom talked me through with it. She, any step of the way, she just discussed, like, okay, your body's changing. Okay, girl, you're going to have to put on a bra. Like, you can't be walking around. You can't wear vests. My sister and I are, when we were growing up, we were very free-spirited. My parents never, like, you know, were like, oh, you got to wear certain clothes around the house. So we would always be, like, pretty much just in our underwear running around the house. And then, you know, as I was getting older, my mom was like, okay, you guys got to put on clothes. And I just never really liked clothes. I was just like, no, I don't want to wear it. And my mom was like, no, 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 you have to because you're starting to mature. So me experiencing puberty, it was more of, my mom would tell me what was happening, and I wouldn't realize it until after the fact. So I'd be like, oh. And, you know, her even talking about, like, from panty liners. And I used to think, like, you know, when you'd see your mom's, like, panty liners and pads and stuff, I made fun of my mom. I was like, you wear diapers. Like, I used to call them diapers. So when she introduced them to me, I was like, girl, I'm not about to wear these diapers. So I had the transition to learning about womanhood was, it was fairly easy because of my mom. I didn't have any kind of conflict trying to, you know, decipher what's going on with my body, how come this is happening, because she explained it to me in a way that as it was happening, I felt comfortable, especially with, like, womanhood, too. When I started developing, we call them little seeds. I don't know if anybody else calls breasts little seeds, but when I started developing those, my mom was like, okay, she got me my first bra, and I would never forget, like, my first training bra snapped in the front. Girl, I thought I was somebody. I was like, yo. I remember taking my little childhood friend to the bathroom and being like, look at this, and showing her. But by then, you know, she already had bigger breasts than me, and I was like, you can try it on too. And then she put it on. I was like, never mind. It won't fit for you, so you're going to give that back. But it was just, it was easy. My mom was like the go-to person when it came to that for a lot of my cousins too. So I never really questioned it. It just came naturally. It's so funny because I wouldn't say my parents, I would say my parent. And the way my mom was very open about sexuality, but she wasn't open, I would say, in my teenage years, in my high school years. It was more so going into college. She was very open about it. Actually, I would say about my sophomore, let me rewind. I'm having amnesia. About my sophomore year in high school, that's when my mom started, you know, having a discussion about, you know, sex and sexuality and becoming a woman and being responsible. And I just remember when I got, like, my first boyfriend around junior year, the discussion that we had about sex was, when you're ready, let me know. And I understand that, you know, they leave, like, the ball's in your court, when you're ready, let me know. So I did not tell my mom when I was ready to have sex. I was like, I'm gonna just do this. And if she find out, she find out. If she doesn't, she doesn't. But I definitely was I was conflicted because my mom and I have such a close relationship. So she had a discussion about sex. She talked about condoms. She talked about periods. She talked about ovulation. And I used to listen. I used to sit down and listen. And I'd act like I'm not listening to her, like we're having just a regular conversation. But in the back of my mind, I was like, okay, so you can get pregnant if it's before your period. So, you know, use a condom. Okay. And I was kind of deciphering, you know, how to navigate this without hurting my mom's feelings, to let her know that, hey, I might be interested in having sex one day, or, hey, you know, I have this boyfriend and I really like him, so I think I want to take the next step with him. When I got to college, that was when, or right before I got to college, that was when my mom was like, okay, this is the plan. You're going to college. I'm going to put you on birth control. And I was like, for what? Like, and I'm horrible, absolutely horrible with taking any kind of pills, vitamins. And I couldn't remember to take my birth control accurately. And so it got to a point where, you know, my mom and I would have an open discussion. She's like, well, you know, if you can't maintain that, let's look at your options. And, you know, we went to the doctor and we looked at the options. Next thing you know, my sister, actually, my younger sister, got the Nexplanon in her hand, in her arm, which is an implanted birth control. And I was like, hold up. I want that. Like, why am I suffering taking these pills? And she got it ready made in her arm. You know, and my mom's like, okay, so you want it? Let's set up an appointment. But she was very, you know, sex, she told me sex was human nature. People are going to have sex regardless. If it's a sin, if it's not a sin, let God do the judging. But at the end of the day, people are going to have sex, whether they like it, you know. And some people, and my mom, you know, she said some people have sex for pleasure and some people have sex, you know, just to procreate. And then she said some people take advantage and have sex and take advantage of other people. So she put them in categories where, you know, you can understand if somebody is pushing up against you and you do not feel like this is not somebody I want to sleep with, then they're not the person for you and you need to let somebody else know or handle that. So she was very just open. And I remember being in college and we would have discussions. She would call me and she's like, are you taking your pills? And I'm like, yes. And she's like, are you studying? I'm like, yes. Are you having sex? And I'd be like, anyway, so I don't have any money on my P card, so help me out. But I always used to change the subject because I got a little bit embarrassed. And then one day she called me and she was like, my mind is blown. And I was talking to her and I was like, about what? And she said, Tiange, who is my younger sister, just sat me down and gave me the whole entire sex talk. And she was like, she even used terminology that I didn't know about. And so I remember coming home that weekend and my mom was like, listen, let's watch her give the sex talk. So my sister starts in and she gives my mom and I the sex talk. And then she goes into my mom's bag. My mom was a maternity care coordinator back then. So she used to have all kinds of birth control, like models and examples, even like vagina models. And my sister's like, and then this is a female condom and this is a male condom and this is a diaphragm. And, you know, my mom was like, I didn't know she knew so much. How did she know so much? And I'm thinking, the bus? I really don't know because I never talked to her about it. But, you know, now that I'm in my, I can say in my 30s, oh God, in my 30s, my mom and I, we have casual conversations where it's something that is, it's not like it's a daily conversation, but if the conversation does arise, it's something that we are comfortable with. She will always ask me, you know, are you protecting yourself? Are you taking right measures? Even when it comes to sexuality, one time she made fun of me because she was like, I opened one of your drawers and I was scared to open them. And I was like, girl, you shouldn't have been in there. I told you look on the left side. But, you know, so it's. For my mom, it's fine. My dad doesn't mention anything about it. The only time I heard my dad say sex is like when he was talking about a car. Like, oh, that guy is so sexy. You know, that guy is not as sexy as my guy. He's like, or he'll walk around and he'll be like, I remember one time my sister asked him, Daddy, like, why don't you have that much hair on your legs? And he turned around and looked at her dead face and was like, because I'm sexy. And like, those are the only terms that we heard my dad apply the word sex. Or he'll say, you know, he'll look at a woman or he'll be looking in a magazine. He'll be like, whoa, this woman is not sexy. But it was to describe. It was an adjective. It wasn't the act or it wasn't a verb. So, but that was the only time. When I taught sex ed, we had a curriculum that we had to teach with fidelity. And I had a Q&A session with my students. So I would have a little box in the middle of the room, and I would allow them to ask any questions they want, as long as they aren't personal questions about someone in the room or myself, just because kids, they're tricky. I wanted it to be honest. I taught females. I actually taught in the jail too, so I taught males at juvenile detention center as well. And I was very honest with them and I was very open with them because from my standpoint, if I'm teaching about sex and sexuality, what I want them to know is the facts. I want them to be able to protect themselves and I want them to be able to make the right decisions, but I also want them to know that they can confide in me, that they can trust me. My guys from the detention center, they were amazing because majority of them had already experienced sex. And so they're coming from a different outlook where it's, okay, well, Miss Betty, and they'll call me Miss Betty. Miss Betty, yo, tell me what happened when this and this happens. And so we would discuss that in length because they've already experienced it. Majority of them have already experienced it. Some of them were even there for sexual like offenses, you know? And so I had to be very careful with how I portrayed myself too. You don't want to teach sex ed and have them thinking, okay, sex is fun, go out there, experience it, just as long as you have a condom. You want to make them think in the terms of sex is also a responsibility. There's an emotional tie, there's a physical tie. That mental capability has to be there. And then we have to talk about consent. Consent was very important. And I pushed that, especially with my middle school students. You know, just because somebody got a nice booty doesn't mean that they want you to run up and smack it. You know, and I'd have to even explain that to my girls. Like, you know, even though that's your girlfriend, that's your friend, you know, you have to be able to know your boundaries. Boundaries are important. And so, and I used to tell them words matter too. So when you are having a conversation with someone and you feel that you are ready to have sex, make sure they understand where you're coming from and the action steps that you're going to take. I enjoyed every part about teaching. Sometimes I would get overwhelmed with the question, especially the, you know, every now and then I get a little question in my question about, you got a boyfriend? What do you do on weekends? And, you know, I'd be like, guys, that's personal. But I would give them a little insight, personal life, especially with my girls. You know, I would explain to them, you know, just the relationship that I had with my mom, because some girls didn't have that opportunity, especially in my class. And so I want them to feel like, you know, Miss Betty will be there to guide you as much as possible along the way. If you need me to actually assist you to have a conversation with your parents, I will be there for you. So it was more of a support system. And they were curious. The word abstinence, it's so funny how many middle schoolers do not know what that means. You know, they cannot actually say, I know what abstinence means. After they get out of my class, I've said it so many times, they know. They know about HIV rates. They know about, you know, any kind of STDs out there. One of my girls the other day actually asked, Miss Betty, what's the herpaderp? And I had to explain that to them. And I was just subbing. I wasn't even there, like, teaching. It was just me subbing. But I just wanted them to feel that they can come to me. They can confide in me. They can ask me anything. The curriculum, of course, I taught with fidelity. But I wanted to reassure them from a holistic perspective. Some of my juvenile detention guys, some of them were fathers. 2 kids, 3 kids, 16 years old, 15 years old, you know. I'm locked up, you know, and I got this girl pregnant right before I came in, you know, and we would talk about that. So what were the action steps that you had? Obviously not using a condom. What's the next? How are you going to look at this from the next go around? You know, we even talked, for my guys, we even talked about vasectomies, you know, hysterectomies. We talk about everything just to make sure that they have that knowledge. And I always tell them, if Miss Betty doesn't know it, Miss Betty will definitely find that answer. She will pull reports. She'll go to the CDC. She'll go to the moon and back to make sure you have the correct knowledge. So,
and you know what's shocking? That it's still taboo. That people still are, like, parents are still uptight about sexual education. If your child isn't getting it from school, they're not getting it from their teacher, where else are they going to get it? And that's, it just blows my mind how some parents are just like, I don't want my kid knowing anything about that. How else is your kid going to figure out where they came from? They didn't come from a stork. They're going to know. And the thing is, kids talk. They talk a lot. And we have the capabilities right now to transform their lives via social media and give them accurate information. So why not be open and honest and transparent about it? Why does it have to be something that's very taboo? It shocks me all the time when parents come up to me and they're like, I couldn't do what you do. You know, thank you so much for talking to her about that. And I'm thinking to myself, it's better if she even had the conversation with you. It's very important. We started doing like parent nights to have like games and stuff to just incorporate more dialogue, talking about relationships, talking about safe dating habits. It was just amazing because to me, even in the African community, it's still so taboo. But it's funny because you never realize the sexual innuendos in our music, in the way we dress, in our culture. It's always there. So when, you know, my cousins are coming up to me and they're like, you need to talk to your niece about this and da, da, da. And I'm like, you have that conversation. It is your responsibility. You can open with me. But at the end of the day, I'm going to send them right back to you because the best person is you. Yes, I'm the fun auntie. Yes, I am the fun cousin who cracks you up and gives you the honest, raw material. When I was there for Christmas, I was in the village, and there was a young girl pregnant. And it's like she came out to the little parties that we have in the village. We call it, you know, the baray. And she was dancing. And this girl, she was 14. She had to be, like, younger than 14. And she was pregnant. And no one felt the need to address that. There is a 14-year-old pregnant. No one felt the need to actually say, what are we doing where we're not teaching our girls how to protect themselves? What are we doing? And why are we not providing our girls sanitary pads, tampons, whatever they need? Why are we not giving them those resources, educational resources, to protect themselves? So when I say yes and no, yes, we'll talk about breasts. In songs, we'll talk about breasts. I make fun of my cousins all the time. I'll say in Creole, like if they're wearing, like my male cousins, if they're wearing tight shirts, I'll say, look, you bobby de nado, which means look at your breasts outside. You know, they're out here just showing, they flashy. What you doing? You know, and we would crack up and laugh about that. And we can say that continuously within context, right? But when it comes down to the consequences and the repercussions of not explaining to our girls and our males what sex actually is, that sex is procreation, then that's where it's conflicting. You know, we talk about genitalia, you know, in our music, in our culture, but we don't actually address the hard facts that, you know, kids are out here, they're having sex. STD rates are climbing, you know. Kids are learning they're learning from their peers. They're not learning from somebody who has that knowledge. So when we, Sierra Leonean culture, we embrace sexuality. We do. But then again, it's taboo. I think about, you know, just hearing stories about like Bondo huts and female circumcision. You know, that's another sexual culture that, you know, even I myself do not understand. I have done research. I have written papers about it in grad school. But when I went back to the village and, you know, one of my aunts, she was like just joking with us, but she, you know, touched my sister's breasts. But, you know, my
my mom kind of explained it like, oh, she was just seeing to see if you were active or not, if you were sexually active or not, because supposedly, you know, these females, and she was a midwife, can touch, you know, certain areas and know, okay, this girl, she no longer has the seed in her breast, so she's physically active. Her hormones are different, or she's aged out. So they can't take them to the bundle hut, you know. And I've had my mom tell me about some of my aunts who have experienced it and what it's like to experience it. Thankfully, my mom and her sisters never did. My mom was born and raised in London, but she went back home. But the culture of it, it's like siloed. You know what I mean? Female circumcision, siloed. Teen pregnancy, siloed. STDs, siloed. Talking about, you know, organs, genitalia in songs, you know, it's in a different context, siloed. So it's just hard to understand. But now it's funny because I'm thinking about certain discussions we've had, you know, and my uncles might be like, oh, like a woman, you know, who is well endowed will pass by and they'll be like, see, Wes, you know, they're talking about a woman's butt, you know. So I think about how sexuality is expressed. Definitely, it's expressed by men and females. But are we having the right conversations? No, we're not. Sex ed teachers aren't always old and gray and boring. We're not wacky and we're not nymphomaniacs. I always get that question like, oh, you know about sex, so tell me. No, bruh, it don't go down like that for me. Sorry. Sorry. So, I just wish people would embrace sex more. I wish when it comes to talking even about gender and sexuality, they would embrace that too. I think in the Sierra Leone culture, we hold our women responsible and not our men. And I don't think that's fair at all, speaking from the little feminist right here. But I think that men should be responsible for sexuality as well as the way they talk to women with the sexual context. I think if there's one thing that I would like to debunk is that, you know, a lot of times people also think sex ed teachers find sex pleasurable, and there are some sex ed educators who the reason why they are sex educators is because they've had an experience, you know, a transformative experience that may make them have a different outlook on sex. I think everybody is responsible for their sexual health, and if we really want to make a difference, we have to start from the top down. I'm anti-Trump. I think that a lot of times people forget the context that sex, it embodies everything. And then at the same time, they silo it to certain areas. And it's not like that. It's holistic. Sexual education is very important because we are essentially with the act of sex, you are making a decision that can not only affect your health, but it can affect the health of others. And I think that's sometimes when we have, and I said this when I was teaching at Juvie, I said sometimes when you have your actions, every action has a reaction. We know that. So sometimes when you think that I am solely, you know, attempting this for pleasure purposes, and I am talking to, you know, kids who are sex offenders, you know, and you're thinking, it's all about me. That person who you are offending is probably feeling a certain type of way too. And you need to be able to look that in its face. Like, I'm responsible not only for myself, but for somebody else. So I think sex ed, when we talk about sexual health, they need to know what's out there. They need to know what risks that there might be. They need to know, okay, if I'm having sex and I'm having unprotected sex, the possibility of me having a child. A lot of teenage pregnancies, the way they happened was, oh, I just did it this one time. Well, that one time was your lucky time, you know? And you need to wrap up every time. And if you know that this person is uncomfortable having sex, then is it worth it at the end of the day? You need to make that decision. If you know you don't have a condom, you need to make a decision. What, are we going to go out for condoms? What, are we just going to Netflix and sit on opposite sides of the couch? You know,
I really hope that my middle school students, the ones that I did get a chance to teach and to just bond with, I want them to know that if there is ever a time, and I tell them this all the time, if there's ever a time where you have to take a step back and you have to think, am I making the right decision? Then you need to really reevaluate what's going on. If ever, and you know, some of them are like, Miss Betty, I just don't think, you know, and it's okay to admit that, but then what are the steps that I can teach you to think? How can I get you there? We want to move you from point Z all the way back up to A. Come on, how do I get you there?
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find us. We can also be found on SoundCloud and wherever else you get your podcasts. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FirstGens. Now that's the number one, STGENS. Plus, you can get extra content on our website, firstgenspodcast.com. First Gens was created by Perrine DeShield, my wonderful cousin, and the show is co-hosted by Perrine and myself, Sky Wilson. All music heard in this episode was created by Nick Stubblefield, who is our amazing musical composer. Thank you to our roundtable crew, Jorge, Diana, Jeannie, and Emmanuel. First Gens is a proud member of Huga, an amazing co-working space based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for all your love and support.
I actually wanted to be Sue Johansson. I will never forget that. I used to stay up and watch her. Oh, my goodness. I wonder if she's still alive. But yeah.
She came to Carolina, like, when we were in undergrad.
Really?
Yeah, and she, like, put a condom on with her mouth, like, on it. Everybody was like,
Sue Johansson.
Sue's life.